Well, this is a very important show to me because truly there are not many people in my position who can really tell the story that I'm going to tell you. It's the story of abortion in this country. And certainly there's a lot of things I don't know, but there are a lot of things I do know, a lot of things that I experienced. And so as we approach, this is Sanctity of Life Month, but my goal today is to tell this story as clearly as I possibly can from my own perspective, from my own experience. But it occurred to me as I was planning all of this and thinking about it and writing things out that the people that I knew and worked with, many of them are gone. They're gone because they were older than I, and now it's my job to tell this story. And I'm going to do that as faithfully as I can. But first, this is Sandy Rios, and you're listening to Sandy Rios 24/7. And you know you can call us at 662-821-2040. That's 662-821-2040. You can write us, and I hope that you will, at sandy@afr.net, sandy@afr.net. You can listen to us on any podcast platform. AFR.net is our home base. You can also go to my website, sandyrios.com, and listen. But Spotify, you know, Amazon, wherever you like to listen, you can listen. Also, you'll find us on all of the social media sites, Sandy Rios 24/7. Well, this is Sanctity of Life Month. With that in mind, we honor now the over 66 million babies whose lives have been tragically ended through abortion since Roe versus Wade. And sadly, since Roe was overturned, babies' lives are at an even greater risk because the abortion pill accounts for over 60% of abortions, making this tragedy available 24/7. But in the midst of this darkness, there is a light that shines. Preborn has rescued over 300,000 babies. With your help, I might add, and every day, on average, they rescue 200-plus babies. When a woman considering abortion hears her baby's heartbeat and sees her precious baby on ultrasound, her baby's chance of life is doubled. Preborn shares free heartbeats and God's love for mother and child, and they need our help. For just $28, the cost of a dinner for most of us, you can sponsor an ultrasound to introduce a mother to her baby for the very first time. And by the way, 100% of your donation goes towards saving the babies. If you want to help, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. All right, well, you're in for, I don't know, a treat. This is going to be a history lesson, and I think that you will actually enjoy it. It's a walk back in time on the history of abortion in this country on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something. Sandy Rios with you, and a little walk down memory lane today that I think will be significant. And let me just start with this. How many of you remember the year 1973? Anybody? Anybody? Or for those of you that don't remember or that weren't alive, or maybe have lost your perspective, could I just tell you that in spite of the anti-war protests and all the violence that we were having in the country at the time, the racial protests, the hangings, the burnings of the cities, abortion was still not legal. And no one wanted it to be legal. One state only, New York State, was the only state that had legalized abortion, and that was very controversial. And could I also add that when I was growing up, abortion was a word that we dared not speak. It was like a curse word. No one ever used that word. And quite frankly, for me as a young person, I didn't really know what that meant. I had the general idea, but I had no idea, really. So we never talked about it. We never spoke of it. never heard about it until suddenly, on the scene, in January of 1973, came this.
Good evening. In a landmark ruling, the Supreme Court today legalized abortions. The majority in cases from Texas and Georgia said that the decision to end a pregnancy during the first 3 months belongs to the woman and her doctor, not the government. Thus, the anti-abortion laws of 46 states were rendered unconstitutional. More on this story from George Herman.
In two related cases and eight separate opinions, the nine justices made abortion largely a private matter and ordered the states to make no laws forbidding it, except possibly during the final months. The court split 7-2, with Justices Byron White and William Rehnquist dissenting. In effect, the court makes abortion subject only to the decision of the pregnant woman's doctor. It ruled that states may make no laws restricting a doctor's right to decide his patient needs an abortion and to carry out that abortion during the first 3 months of a pregnancy. After that comparatively safe 3-month period, abortions may be regulated, but not prohibited, by state law and for the benefit of the mother's health alone. Abortion is somewhat more dangerous at this stage, and states may insist, for example, that they be performed in regulated hospitals. Only in the final stages of pregnancy may states intervene and say no to abortion. The court's decision, written by Justice Blackmun, thus sets limits on the right to abortion on demand. One limit is the time when doctors believe the fetus may be able to survive outside the mother's womb. At that point, usually in the 7th month of pregnancy, the state may take legal action to protect the unborn child, even forbidding abortion, except to protect the mother. The newly liberalized abortion law brought immediate reaction.
I think that to raise the dignity of woman and give her freedom of choice in this area is an extraordinary event. And I think that January 22nd, 1973 would be an historic day.
In this instance, the Supreme Court has withdrawn protection for the human rights of unborn children, and it is teaching people that abortion is a rather innocuous procedure provided that there are proper legal safeguards. I think that the judgment of the court will do a great deal to tear down the respect previously accorded human life in our culture.
That was the voice just then of Father James McHugh trying to make the case against this decision. This is the early days when the Catholic Church, who later took leadership on this issue, and they did a wonderful job, and the Protestants were slow to join. But we did finally. And I would say, you know, on the transgender and gay issue, they were slow to join, and we led the way. So it's been a great partnership of Christians of different definitions. But that was Father James McHugh trying to make the case with the knowledge that he had at that time. And before him was the voice of Dr. Alan Guttmacher. He's the one who said, this is a very good thing. I think it's good that women have the freedom of choice. Well, if the name sounds familiar, Dr. Alan Guttmacher was the founder of the Guttmacher Institute. What is that? The Guttmacher Institute is the think tank for Planned Parenthood. Now, Planned Parenthood has been around for decades. The founder was Margaret Sanger, who wrote and led organizations in the 1930s. She's kind of the mother of the eugenics movement, meaning there are inferior races and some people who should be eliminated. And actually, Adolf Hitler loved Margaret Sanger and her work, and he quoted her often. So Guttmacher is the head of the think tank, the one who thought all those wonderful things out for Planned Parenthood as they developed their massive strategy to eliminate people, especially of color, in cities. And that's we could talk about that at a different time, but that is a fact. Okay, so that was the voice of Alan Guttmacher. But to go backwards a little bit, they said that the decision was basically that you could only have abortion for the first, in the first 3 months. That's what he said a couple of times, both anchors, and we'll get to Walter Cronkite in just a second. But as you listen to it progress, you can see that it's actually not true at all. They go back and forth. They say things like this. I'll make my case. They say that states may. Babies are usually viable. They guess, around the 7th month. And states may pass laws to restrict abortion in some way after that point. May. States don't have to. Doesn't have to be a restriction. So the truth is that the Roe versus Wade case and the Doe versus Bolton, which was the companion case, and I'll get into those in more detail in just a second. Together, one, Roe versus Wade made abortion legal, and Doe versus Bolton made it legal for all 9 months. Restrictions were going to be able to be applied after the 7th month. If a state wanted to do that, they could, but they don't have to. And so that's the truth about Roe versus Wade. That was a lie. And it actually came out of the mouth of Walter Cronkite. Now, Walter Cronkite was America's anchorman. Everybody loved him. It's hard to explain this to people right now, but at the time, like it's in 1972, 1973, and earlier, we only had 3 networks. In other words, we didn't have cable news. We had just only a few other channels, actually, for entertainment or whatever you wanted to watch. And at night, at 5 o'clock, the news came on. Your family gathered round. There was no recording it, no stopping it. If you didn't catch it, you missed the news. And we had all of the network's anchors were actually very famous. There was Howard K. Smith and others like that, Frank McGee. But Walter Cronkite was the best, and he became known again as America's anchorman. And millions of people watched him every night and really just listened to every word he said, because we thought at the time, strangely enough, we thought that our news people, because news was supposed to be unbiased and just delivered just the facts. And so we trusted them, and we thought that what they said was true. Well, I came to learn later that Walter Cronkite was an avowed leftist. And there's a reason I can tell you why I know that's true. I'll get to that in just a second, actually. But Walter Cronkite was very much anti-war, anti-Vietnam. Now, he never said that, but he started his nightly news broadcasts with body counts, the body bags, with photos and videos of American soldiers being carried out of Vietnam. Now, Vietnam was a tragedy. But Walter Cronkite had a bias, and he never talked about the gains. He never talked about the fact that we actually were close to victory. It was only when the political way wins, and you'll understand that now, the political minds in Washington, D.C. decided that it was not the political thing to do to try to end that war, and they really, by their indecision or wanting to pull out and yet letting our guys stay there and kind of fight, sort of, we can kind of understand that because of the Middle East wars, the war on terror, so-called, because we talked about rules of engagement. Well, they did things like that, where they could no longer really fight. But in the early years, we were serious about pushing back the Chinese communists in Vietnam. And that's what we were doing, and we're having great success. But Walter Cronkite never told you that. Nope, he wanted you to see the body bags and feel the emotional pang, you know, of the loss of our soldiers. And certainly it was an emotional pang, but it was taking place because people in our country was determined to stop the increase of communism around the globe. So that's really how it all started. But Walter Cronkite had his own views. And on a different issue, it was Walter Cronkite who, leading up to that Roe versus Wade decision in 1973 on the nightly news, used to give stats. I don't know if it was nightly, but it was often, on the number of, are you ready, coat hanger abortions performed in American homes by women who could not get abortion. He started on this, and of course you thought it was a fact, you know, 5,000 coat hanger abortions. This is the way he would talk. Well, the reason I know he's lying and that he's on the left on this is because I had the opportunity to interview Dr. Bernard Nathanson. Now, who is that? He was the founder of NARAL, which is one of the most rabid pro-abortion groups in the country still. Dr. Bernard Nathanson was an abortionist, and he ended up having a change of heart. I wouldn't say that he became a Christian. I don't think it was that. He had a change of heart on the whole abortion issue, and he came over to, quote-unquote, our side. And I was in Washington, D.C. at the time, and Concerned Women for America made a video of the history of Roe versus Wade at that point in time. Robert Knight produced it, and I was the host. So Dr. Nathanson was one of our guests. And over dinner, Dr. Nathanson told me about Walter Cronkite. We later put this on our video, but he talked about how NARAL, which he was leading at that time, would feed Cronkite these numbers. They were the ones who fed him this, and Cronkite knew full well they were creating, they were fabricating the numbers. They just guessed because they were trying to persuade America to embrace abortion. So that's Walter Cronkite on the nightly news. So let's go back to CBS and that report we played at the top. This is CBS, and it picks up with a story about the case itself. Let's listen.
One of today's plaintiffs was an anonymous former mental patient identified only as Mary Doe, 22 years old. CBS News correspondent Fred Graham talked with her recently.
Now, the first two children you'd had they been taken away from you?
Yes, because I couldn't take care of them by myself, and I couldn't with my husband.
And then I believe you had one more, and it was also put out for adoption, wasn't it?
Yes, I put it out because of my husband.
Now, after you were unable to get the abortion for the fourth pregnancy, what happened?
Well, I had to go on and have the baby and have it adopted out.
New York State, among others, already have liberalized abortions. Now the rest of the country must follow suit. The White House offered no comment, but President Nixon has always strongly opposed liberalized abortion. Other opponents are now talking of a constitutional amendment to reverse today's ruling. Until then, if the experience of New York State is any guide, America will eventually have one abortion for every two births. George Herman, CBS News, Washington.
There was, of course, other reaction. Cardinal Cook, the Catholic Archbishop of New York, called the decision a shocking action, and Cardinal Kroll of Philadelphia termed it an unspeakable tragedy.
You know, I noticed that anchor, George Herman, the second one in between the Cronkite report, didn't sound that happy about it to me. You know, I'm telling you, America was pro-life then. We would not have even thought about abortion, but seven justices forced this on us. Justice Blackmun was the chief of the Supreme Court at that time, and he was appointed by Nixon, but he became extremely liberal on everything. He pushed the bar on everything. And so these seven justices really did force abortion on this country under the leadership of Justice Blackmun. He's a hero to the left and to the pro-abortion forces, but he's no hero. He is responsible for the millions of deaths that have taken place since then through abortion. But that's what happened. And so I find it very interesting that they actually ordered the states that they could not limit abortion in any way during the first 3 months, the first trimester. And that they, you know, they had all of these, don't you dare do this, don't you dare do this. They forbade them passing laws that would inhibit abortion in any way. And I thought, you know, what happened to the 10th Amendment? You know, we think we live in a liberal time now, but I have to tell you that there were lots of people who were godless and liberal through the history of our country, really. Even back when Margaret Sanger was working in the 30s, there were a lot of people who embraced her philosophies. So, you know, sin and wickedness is not new. But I do think that it's kind of abounding right now. But back to this story. So there were two cases, which means that there were two women. Norma McCorvey was the Roe in Roe versus Wade, and Sandra Cano was the Doe in Doe versus Bolton. Those were the companion cases. Remember that Roe made abortion legal and Doe made it illegal for all 9 months. Now, I met both of these women and talked with them. Norma McCorvey was, she died a few years ago. Interesting story about her. She was had some mental illness, and she was in and out of facilities. And you were never quite sure that what she was saying was accurate because she would change her story a lot. So she was definitely, she was recruited to be the face of this case, as was Sandra Cano. They both would tell you that. And interestingly enough, they both would say, and they've written about this, that they were both, neither of the cases were true. Sandra Cano, she was raped. She was never raped. Norma McCorvey, the circumstances of her abortion, she said, I don't think she even had an abortion. But they used both of them because they were sympathetic characters. Norma was very poor. Sandra had confused past. And it was a confusing story. But they fabricated the stories, like abortion in the case of rape is a good argument for abortion for many people. And so they crafted this story for Sandra Cano, which she later totally decried and denounced. Well, who did that? Well, there were two female attorneys who took this on, and they found out about these women. They recruited them, and they are the ones that crafted the story, and they're champions now. When New York passed a bill a few years ago, you might recall, that made abortion legal for all 9 months, and they were doing this in the chamber of the legislature in New York, and they were cheering. They brought in, made noise, they had whistles. Sarah Weddington was at that celebration, and she is one of the two women attorneys. I want you to hear Sarah when she was interviewed several years ago. Of course, I'm not even sure she's still living. I don't know. But this is what she had to say, at least in part, about Norma McCorvey and what took place. This is clip 8.
In an odd twist to this story, I want to talk a little bit about the woman in this case, in this landmark case, Roe, dubbed Roe. Her actual name is Norma McCorvey. Again, last night I'm watching a video of her doing an interview. She was very pro-choice for a number of years, and then a few years ago became an evangelical Christian, and now is with a group that fights against choice. And she says in this interview, she says, there's really never a day that goes by that we don't think of how we can overturn Roe versus Wade. What do you think when you hear her say that, knowing what you know about her back from 39 years ago?
Well, first, I think it's an honest statement that she spends a lot of time and effort working with people who want to overturn the decision. But when she was in a situation where she was pregnant and she didn't want to be, she wanted it to be legal for her to have an abortion. You see, I think, again, it's not up to her to say to somebody else what it should be. And so she obviously has the right to make her own decision. For 25 years, she was pro-choice. In recent years, she's been anti, but that's not the question. And the case was not for one person. It was a class action. So it was for all women who were or might become pregnant and want the option of abortion. And I still think that all women should have that ability to decide to have an abortion, to decide not to have an abortion, to decide to put a pregnancy once there's a birth up for adoption. That should be her decision.
Sarah Weddington, we don't have a lot of time left, but what would you want to tell young women today?
Well, first I would say that it is, you look back as I was growing up, and there were so many limits on what women could do. Women couldn't even run full court in basketball. We got half court and two dribbles. We didn't get credit unless our fathers or our husbands signed for us. Now most people get a credit card offer every week. We didn't get to make decisions about our own reproductive. We didn't get to go to law school. I was in the first group of women who went to law school. We didn't get equal pay. And so what we've been doing all these years is trying to push back barriers so that women could make more decisions. So what I would want to say to them is, don't let them take this right away. It should be your decision, but only if you fight to save it will it be kept.
This is what I've learned through the years of debating pro-abortion women. They're very smooth. They're very good. She sounds nice, doesn't she? She sounds very winsome and believable. And a lot of the things that she says, they ring true with us, don't they? Let me just tell you, do not be deceived. Sarah Weddington is spewing poison to future generations. She's making the case. It reminds me of theologians that I have criticized many times at this mic, who 75% of what they say is true, and then 25% is really from the pit of hell. It's a twist. It's a lie. I'll give you an example of this with Sarah Weddington, because she just was talking about, she morphed from abortion to women's rights and how bad it was for her when she was growing up. Where she's probably a bit older than I am, but you know, I remember women didn't have many rights, maybe not as badly as she described it. I remember I could be a teacher, maybe a nurse, but I wasn't, you know, allowed all the options because I was a woman. That was true. And, you know, that needed to change. And it has changed. But could I make the case to you that equal pay for equal work is not the same as abortion? Could I make the case that, you know, basketball rules and what you're allowed to do on the court is not the same as killing your baby? You see, that just doesn't compute. That just doesn't make sense. And yet she was so winsome. And she's talking to young girls, persuading them. And then she said the biggest lie of all, which is the one that Satan told Eve, you should have a right to decide. You have your own choice. You know, you're like the arbiter of your faith. You are, well, your own God, I guess, if you can kill your own baby and the decision is just yours and no one else's. Does that not make you like God? You too can be like God. You too can be like God. As seductive and destructive as Satan with the apple and Eve. That was Sarah Waddington. That was Sarah Waddington. I'm going to take a short break. And when we come back, I want to tell you just a bit of the story of how I became pro-life and how I got into the movement. I think you'll find it interesting. I hope so anyway. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Abortions performed by Planned Parenthood were among the top leading causes of death in America, revealing the terrifying truth of the left's anti-life agenda. According to Planned Parenthood's 2022-23 annual report, abortions performed by the organization accounted for the top four leading causes of death. Think about that. Paid for by our tax dollars. And honestly, this freight train is going down the track so fast and so powerfully. It's really hard. It's going to be hard for us to stop this. And I think one of the best ways, I've said before, I'll say again, is preborn. Preborn, who is not part of the government, not part of the public debate or campaigns, but an organization that's simply providing ultrasounds for moms who are pregnant and doubting whether they should carry the baby to allow them to see their baby through ultrasound. It's an amazing process, and it actually works. When the moms see their babies, I think it doubles the chance that they will not take the life of their baby. You know, you can't beat those odds. If you'd like to help, $28 pays for one ultrasound, just one, and you can send however much you can afford. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Hi, it's Sandy Rios, your old friend from The Morning Show. So many crucial and frightening events are unfolding before our eyes that we have decided to re-engage with the daily news on Sandy Rios 24/7, as we once did in the mornings. I want to invite you to come over to the podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, so that we can work our way through these difficult times together. Just go to AFR.net or any podcast platform. You can also find Sandy Rios 24/7 at sandyrios.com. And one more thing, a fun thing. My book, God's Velvet Hammer, is now on Audible. Sometimes listening is better than reading. I recorded it in my own voice, which makes it even more personal for all of you who know me so well. Audible books are available on Amazon.com. God bless each and every one of you for your faithfulness to Him. My prayer is that as we stand together in this battle, we can finish well.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Oh, haters, At the Supreme Court today, an historic upheaval. In a sweeping ruling that overturned a half a century of precedents, five justices ended the right of American women to choose abortion under the Constitution. The court upheld Mississippi's ban on abortions after 15 weeks by a 6-3 vote, and five of those justices went even farther, voting to overturn Roe v. Wade itself. Today's opinion is nearly identical to the draft that leaked from the court last month. Justice Samuel Alito rejecting the 1973 landmark ruling in Roe, scorning the idea that the Constitution protects a right to choose abortion. Roe was on a collision course with the Constitution from the day it was decided, Alito wrote. It is time to heed the Constitution and return the issue of abortion to the people's elected representatives. Chief Justice John Roberts joined the conservative majority in upholding the Mississippi law, but he insisted the court did not need to overturn Roe. Instead, he searched for some middle ground, pleading. None of this, however, requires that we also take the dramatic step of altogether eliminating the abortion right first recognized in Roe. And from the liberal wing, a scathing, agonized dissent. Justice Stephen Breyer arguing that Alito's ruling is based on nothing more than the fact that three new justices appointed by Donald Trump, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett, cast decisive votes to overturn Roe. Neither law, nor facts, nor attitudes have provided any new reasons to reach a different result than Roe did. All that has changed is this court, Breyer wrote. And in the dissent's last line, Breyer, along with Justices Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor, struck a somber note. With sorrow for this court, but more for the many millions of American women who have today lost a fundamental constitutional protection, we dissent. The impact of today's ruling will be immediate. 13 states have trigger laws that end access to abortion now that Roe is overturned. 13 more states are now expected to move quickly to ban abortion.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. Well, that's, Roe versus Wade was overturned in 2022, and I think a lot of people expected that there would be a sea change. Well, there has been a sea change, and it has actually been toward more abortion as it's gone back to the states. That's a sad story and a story for us on another day. We will talk about it. But I actually got into, some people will ask me how I got into radio. How did I get into politics and news? How did that happen? Well, it's actually, I don't have to say I don't know. I know exactly how it happened. I was 21, and I was in Berlin, Germany. My husband was in the military assigned to Berlin Brigade. I had gone down to see him for something, and I needed to do something. I needed pencil and paper, and someone sent me to an empty office. I went in there, and I sat down at this big metal desk, very military-looking, and I was looking through the drawers. And I got to the second drawer on the left. I still remember. And I opened that drawer, and I saw pamphlets that just, I couldn't quite make it out, but I pulled one up and brought it to my eye level, and it was pictures of babies pulled apart, bloody pictures of dismangled newborns or preborns, their arms, their hands, their heads. I had never seen anything as horrific as that in my life. I will say, okay, I'm going to tell you something really personal because I think this will help you understand. For me, it was a lot like, I remember going to, my dad was a tough guy, big guy, World War II vet, a man's man, and he worked in the oil fields. He was a pumper and a roughneck at one point. So this is not like, this is not a Sunday school life. He didn't become a Christian until he was 36. But I remember going with my daddy, I used to call him, to one of the leases. And I was looking in another big metal desk. And it was like a shared desk. And I opened up the drawer, and there was a picture, very graphic picture, of a woman without any clothes on. Well, I had never seen anything like that in my life. And, of course, it was provocative. It wasn't, someone's friend. It was, and of course I closed the door, but I've never forgotten that. And so there are images, and most of you men will understand what I'm talking about because this is how pornography takes root in you. You're very visual, and it's hard to get those things out of your mind. And so it's the same. It was the same with me for that. It seared my heart. I couldn't stand understand what I was looking at. And as I read, of course, I learned really for the first time ever that abortion, they were trying to legalize abortion. This was probably before it happened. This would have been in the, I'm not sure, before or just a little bit after. And I knew nothing about it. I knew nothing about Roe versus Wade. And this pamphlet told me all about abortion. That's when it started. And so then I came back to the United States. I was 8 months pregnant with, or 7 months pregnant with my daughter to be, Sasha. And when Sasha was born, as things developed, she began to seizure. And then as things developed further, she grew up to be severely disabled, with multiple seizures, multiple illnesses. And so my first part of my adult life was taking care of her for 20 years. All that to say that as a believer in Christ, I had a lot of questions about life and the value of life. And of course, I went deep with the Lord during that time. It was a time, a crucible of learning some deep things. And in the course of that, I was a singer, so I ended up writing a song dedicated to her called Sasha's Song. And when I would sing and do concert work, people would ask me, well, they didn't have to ask me. I talked to them about Sasha. I talked to them about God was how God was teaching me. And so that, by no understanding of my own, drew me into the pro-life movement in Chicago. Because people heard about what I was saying, and they asked me to come and speak and sing at pro-life gatherings. And so I ended up getting drawn into some of the greatest pro-life leaders this nation ever saw. One of them was Joe Scheidler. He was called the Green Beret of the pro-life movement. You maybe heard me mention him before. I love Joe. He lived to be, like, I think, in his 90s. And I've interviewed him many times. Joe was such a great friend, and he was fearless, and he taught me so much about this issue. And then Phyllis Schlafly, a very dear friend. Phyllis was one of the pioneers against feminism. She was the pioneer against feminism. She was a tremendous opponent to Faye Waddleton. And so Phyllis became a very good friend, and I learned at her feet also. And as I said earlier, starting the show, when I thought about doing this, I realized my dear friends whose feet I learned are now gone. And they can't speak to this anymore except through their writings, and they have left. In fact, Phyllis wrote a book that's still relevant. It's called A Choice, Not an Echo. She started it from her, you know, her garage in St. Louis, Missouri. She started producing this book, and then she became very famous. And, of course, Phyllis would counter Sarah Weddington. And because Phyllis was one of the first women who ever went to Harvard Law School. So it was not impossible for women, just not very common, as Sarah claimed. All right, so back to my story. Because of my work with the pro-life movement, and a series of other things that are too complicated, my book is God's Velvet Hammer. You might enjoy hearing this, just part of the story, but you might enjoy reading more about this that I don't have time to tell. But I got some national attention for my work, and that caused me to be invited to go to Washington, D.C. and become the head of Concerned Women for America. And in that capacity, I, for the first time in my life, and it was a rough transition from radio to television. I wasn't good at it at first, I have to tell you. I made a lot of mistakes. But I ended up debating the very people that I had read about. The opponents who made the headlines were my opponents on camera. That would be Cecile Richards. She was the head of Planned Parenthood. I debated with Cecile many times. She was so good. She was probably better than Sarah Weddington. She was shrewd, and she was vicious. And I debated her many, many times. And also there was Patricia Ireland, who was the head of National Organization for Women, who was my opponent so often during those years. So this is my background on this issue. And I mentioned earlier that as president of Concerned Women for America, I had great staff. And one of them was Bob Knight, who, you know, preceded me in this movement, who also at his feet, I learned. Bob asked permission to for us, CWA, to do this movie on the history of Roe versus Wade. And that's where I learned a lot of the things I've just shared. I knew a lot about it, but I learned a lot more. And that video was very powerful. I was the host and Bob was the producer. And so this is the kind of thing that we did at Concerned Women at that time. It wasn't just life. It was every issue that had a moral basis. We worked at the UN. We were an NGO. We were doing our best. And I think we, you know what? I am not discouraged. In spite of what's happening in the culture, I know that truth will prevail. It's already prevailed once. One last kind of historical thing. In the 1970s, I already told you, in the 60s and prior to that, America was pro-life. There was no question. Abortion was a dirty word. We loved our babies. We didn't think about killing them. There were a few people that probably did that. I'm sure there were. I'm confident that there were. But it was not accepted or embraced, as it should be. It's wrong. It should not be accepted and embraced. But when Roe versus Wade was passed, there was an entire cottage industry of making the case for killing your babies. And you know what the arguments are. It's rape, incest, the life of the mother. Those are all powerful arguments, and I won't take them on right now. I'll just say, if you want to listen to an argument about choosing life, even in the case of rape, go back and listen to my recent interview with Ryan Bomberger, because Ryan is a child who was born of rape, and we get into that. It's quite a discussion, but I won't get sidetracked here. I'll just say that they were very good. They knew exactly what to say, and they were all ready, and they had all of the news outlets. Walter Cronkite wasn't the only person. It became, you know, the thing to do was to be pro-choice. How quickly that flipped. And the president's wives, Pat Nixon was not pro-choice, but the president's wives who came in afterward would speak like Betty Ford was very pro-choice, and she would speak out in favor of abortion. It was very upsetting, I have to tell you. And in the 80s, if you were a pro-lifer, trust me, you were a deplorable. You were like garbage. You were any kind of horrible a comment you could make. If you were pro-life, you had cooties. You were on the dark side. And if you had a pro-life rally, which I went to many, especially when I got to D.C. and I'd see these cameramen with these huge round Zoom cameras, there would be thousands of people at a rally, or say the Hike for Life or the March for Life. And the cameraman would invariably choose the strangest looking person in the crowd. And, you know, there were strange looking people in the crowd, as there are in any crowd. But then I would see that camera zoom in on that person. And of course, when the person was zoomed in on, they took that moment to be even more ridiculous or outlandish. And that was the face, that was the visual that Americans saw in the newspapers, on television. That's what they saw of pro-lifers. Every movie was pro-choice. There were a lot of movies made to advance abortion. And our side had no voice at all. We had no voice at all. So you know what we did? We decided to make the case, as God gave us strength and wisdom, on the truth. And the truth was that that was a baby, that it was moving, kicking, that it sucked its thumb, that it had a heartbeat, and all those things we developed. And ultrasound was developed with God's help, and that became a powerful tool. And of course, that's what preborn uses, is now more advanced ultrasound technology to show moms the babies. That's truth. That has impact. No argument can argue against this kicking, moving, heart-beating baby who favors a family member, or, you know, is a boy or is a girl. That's a powerful thing. It's truth. And so we began to use truth, and even though we didn't have the networks, it was a steady stream. And boy, when we had a chance on television, you can imagine how I took advantage of every moment I had. I'm sorry, but that takes me back to sitting in those chairs, getting ready to go on camera, and praying for God's help, whatever the topic, whether it was life or whether it was homosexuality, homosexual marriage, always with the heart toward the victims. The women are victims. The babies are victims. And in the case of homosexuality, the people themselves are victims, always with compassion and love. And that's what I did. And many people like me, a lot of my staff, we did everything we could. And so guess what happened? I'm not saying because of what we did, but we were part of it. What happened was the tide began to turn. Suddenly, Republicans who had been pro-choice, because the president's wife, for heaven's sake, was pro-choice. Everyone was, anybody in the cool it crowd was pro-life. You didn't want to be like those icky pro-life people. Suddenly that changed. And it changed in a big way. It changed to the point that we got to in the 90s. And up until recently, not a single Republican would run unless they said, no, that's not true, because there's some exceptions. But almost all Republican candidates had to be pro-life or they would never get elected. That's where we took this. Our presidents became pro-life. Reagan was pro-life, and that, of course, made a huge difference. But he was not as outspoken as later Donald Trump was in his first election. And so this is where we were for the last 15, 20 years. And now suddenly all of that has changed. And so I won't talk about why that's changed. I talked about that with Ryan in the previous podcast, so I hope that you'll tune in and we can talk about that a little bit. To change the subject a little bit, many of us have been concerned about the moderation of President Trump and the Republican Party, moderation on the abortion issue. It was pretty upsetting what happened leading up to the 2024 election, and we did talk with Ryan about that again in the last podcast. I'm not going to go into all the details of that. But I will say that one thing I have not addressed on any podcast is the influence of Melania Trump. When I heard her make her position on abortion known, and it came out in her book, her recent book, and then she did a lot of interviews after that. And that's of course, leading up to the election. So this is not new news. But I sort of feel that that might explain a lot about why things have shifted. I want you to listen to this exchange with Melania and Maria Bartiromo.
Had you spoken to President Trump about that before you wrote that in the book?
Yes, he knew my position and my beliefs since the day we met. I believe in individual freedom. I want to decide what I want to do with my body. I think I don't want government in my personal business. I think it's very important. And I, as I said in the book, and it's very well explained in the chapter, what does really my body, my choice means? Because timing really matters, and also the restrictions. So I encourage people to read it. Because we live in the world that everybody has should have individual freedom. That was not written in the last week or the last month.
That These are your convictions.
Correct, but that book was written months before, and it was in a print months before. So that was my belief, and it is my belief. And I wanted to put it in the book because I want to be authentic.
All right, so that's Melania talking with, again, Maria Bartiromo. So I have a few things to say about that. One thing is, of course, I'm heartsick about it. I can tell you that. But before I kind of talk about that, let me just say that Melania is from Eastern Europe. You know that. She was part of the Soviet Union, her country was, before the breakup of all those little divisions of countries. And I can tell you from firsthand experience, not firsthand knowledge, that abortion was used as birth control in Eastern Europe. And of course, they didn't believe in God. There was no God. And so what did it matter? And I know this because I interviewed a Russian Orthodox priest and a doctor in one of the largest hospitals in Moscow. And we had this discussion, at least in part, at a table. We spoke probably for about 2 hours. We talked about a lot more than this, but I did ask them about abortion. That's what they told me. And so that's the world in which she grew up. You know, for 60 years, there was no God, and abortion was fine. Now, a caveat. I did ask them if women still had a conscience about it, and they said yes. Of course, not all of them, but many women did have a conscience about just innately taking the life of their baby. So I just wanted to make that clear. But culturally, it was very accepted. Melania also comes from now later when she got, became out of that bondage of communism, and she came to the West and became a top model in the United States and Europe and England and the New York later. She was a gorgeous woman, and you can imagine the culture in which she traveled. She was not, I don't know what her moral foundation is. She might have known about God, I can't say. But that's her surroundings and her choices put her in places where she was not hearing anything other than that abortion was good. And it certainly would have been, to their mind, to a top model, it would have been convenient because of their livelihood. Can you imagine? So that's not hard to figure out. And now Melania married President Trump, and I think, personally, this is just my take on it, right or wrong, I believe they've both moved to the right together. I think they've kind of been on a journey. And I remember when Melania Trump at the first inauguration quoted the Lord's Prayer beautifully. Oh, it was gorgeous. Of all the things that she could have said, and that's what she chose to do. And so I think she's been on a journey. I've given her too much credit for where she is on that journey. I rightfully admit that. But keep in mind that for many people, and I think you'll know this true unless you've been in church all your life and don't know another outside, don't know other cultures or other environments, many people come to Christ later in life, but they don't automatically embrace the things that Christians and the Christian culture just think is a duh, or of course we're pro-life. They're not there. There are things that God has to teach us one bit at a time. And I am praying that that's where Melania and President Trump are. I believe President Trump is more committed to life than she is. And I think he's, you know, it's hard when your mate is in a different place. Look, I can't blame all that on her. I'm not. But you could imagine that he would moderate. He loves her. He listens to her. And that's not an excuse. I'm trying to help you as I try to figure out myself what's happening here. And so I just maintain that my thinking is that they're on this journey, and they... Do they have people around them? This is what I'm concerned about, that people around them are not speaking the truth to them. There aren't people that have deep, I don't know this. I'm wondering if there aren't people who have deep understanding of why life is sacred. I find myself thinking, well, if Melania had seen what I've seen in terms of photos, dismembering, if she understood the David Del Leiden Planned Parenthood videos where they were selling body parts, if she knew the viciousness and the wickedness of that industry, I wonder if she wouldn't move to a different position. And that's what I hope for, and that's what I pray for. And so with that, that's the end. That's my perspective on abortion as of today in 2025. One last thing I need to add. We talked recently about assisted suicide and how popular it is, especially in Canada. In fact, most people are all in favor. They're having parties in some cases, you know, celebrating with friends and then taking their life, you know, with help of someone or by their own hand, taking their life chemically with the permission of government and law. And we discussed how this is mankind wanting to be like God, wanting to take on decisions that we don't have any business making. And I really do believe that this is the same thing with abortion. And what Melania is expressing about, I have a right to do what I want to with my body, is that powerful lie from hell that Sarah Weddington was spreading. It's not true. Young women, it's not true. I don't know. There's more to say about it, but for today, I'm finished. I want to thank our sponsor, Timothy Plan. They allow you to put your money where your values are. That includes the sanctity of life. And discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.